Everybody likes guns. They just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 133. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and tonight with me I have Thomas and Benny.
Hello, everybody.
So, Benny, why don't you get us started with what you did in guns this week?
So, I worked and learned how to do stuff on my job, so I did not have a lot of time to do stuff. But I did sign up for the Steel Challenge in Silverdale Range, whatever.
What's the date of the match?
May 28th, I believe. They say they have limited space, but I've been getting emails all weekend about people registering, so I'm not sure what they're up to now, but it's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like in the 40 or 50s now. Like, I don't know how many people show up to a match, but it's looking pretty full.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. And then I was just fiddling around with my AR lower, and I'm wondering if it's normal for the front pin to be so stiff. I'm wondering if maybe I should shave a little bit off the retaining pin spring, or just basically work it back and forth until it becomes smoother.
Like, you're talking about to take the pin, like as if you want to separate the upper and the lower?
Right, right. I don't have a buffer tube in yet, so I can't really work with the rear retaining pin, but the front one is definitely super stiff.
Yeah, I don't think it's that unusual. I had asked that same question about my rear retaining pin, because I actually need a punch to get it out, and I was told at the time that it was actually considered almost a feature, because my gun was so locked up so tight that was a good thing.
Right. I just feel like it's my polymer is just like a little bit out of spec. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'd wait to get the upper installed and the whole thing, and then see if it needs to be adjusted a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Since I've built my AR, I think I might have split it in half once. Actually, I split it in half when I broke my handguard. That's the only time that I've actually completely taken my upper off. Like, the way that they kind of open up for cleaning, there's really no need to take the upper off unless you're going to do some real work to it or you're planning on storing and transporting it in two pieces.
Yeah.
So I would say I wouldn't think it would be that big of a deal. I'm more worried about, you know, once you take material off, you can't put it back on.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had a brand new AR, so I'm used to the pins just, you know, pushing a little bit with your finger and they just sliding ever falling so nicely out. Right out.
Yeah,
never had it that bad, but
yeah. Well, I think Thomas is right. If you just wait, when you have the whole gun built and you've taken it to the range a few times, if you decide you want to make it a little easier for it to come apart, then you could do it. But you may find, you know, you're never taking it apart and there's really no need to risk any potential damage, right? So.
I don't know. Then I tried to insert a magazine just now, and that was a little rough, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm definitely thinking about upgrading my lower. So, but I guess we should wait. I guess I should wait till I finish my build before I decide, you know, I need to upgrade this part or that part.
Ah, it's okay. You can start a wish list now.
Yeah. So that's all I did in guns this week. Oh, and I colored in the rear sight of my Jericho in preparation for the steel challenge. I hope to take it to the range next week to see if I need to fill out the front dot. But so far, it's just the rear dots I filled out.
Okay.
So, yeah, the temporary stuff I gave it wore off pretty fast, I guess, eh?
Well, not – it lasted – what has it been, 2 years? A year. It's been a year. Maybe the past three or four months, it's completely gone, and I needed to reapply something. And I feel like the dots were throwing off my shots, so I filled out at least the rear one. So I have a solid rear sight, and – the front sight is really crisp now.
Okay. So did you go with the erasable whiteboard black marker again, or did you go permanent this time?
Oh, I went permanent Sharpie.
Okay.
Full-blown Sharpie.
Yeah, that's it. Well, after we spoke, I actually put a permanent marker in my range box now too. Because the other one dried out. You can try it with just, I find all black sights are great for precision shooting, especially, you know, bullseye. But some people like to have some color in the front sight for action pistol. I guess it's personal preference. You can change the color too. Like you can go to Michael's, the arts and crafts shop, and you can buy a little kit of all different colors, glow in the dark, neon colors, and just all you need is like a toothpick. Just dip the toothpick in and just fill up the hole. Cause it's a big crater in the front sight. And it just comes right off with a needle. If you don't like it, you can just take a toothpick and just pull out what's in there and put another color in.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's what I did in guns this week.
All right. Thomas, what'd you get up to?
I got an early birthday present from Terry. I went to Firearms Outlet Canada and I got 1,000 rounds of the Camper 124, round nose. And I went to get some But somebody had gotten there an hour before me and bought all the federal primers. They had no federal primers left. So I bought some CCI. I hope they work. They're pretty hard.
Oh, yeah. CCI is a pretty big stretch, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I do have some Winchesters still downstairs. And I have about 200 or 300 of the federal. I don't think the Excalibur will have a problem with it. That thing's never failed to fire and function. So if the Excalibur will handle the CCI, then I'll just keep using it. What else? I loaded up some 45s, and I tweaked my Kimber Gold Match. When I got that gun 5-6 years ago, like right from the factory, the trigger pull was nice, but it was about a solid 4 pounds. And Mike was saying how he's always tweaking his spring. So I went down and I just tweaked the spring a little bit and I got it down to 3 pounds and I loaded up 100 rounds and I got to the range and I forgot the 45 ammo at home. So I was kind of disappointed there. There's nothing worse than getting all the way to the range and then not having your ammo. But at least I had a couple 109mm with me, and I had my 22.
Yeah, that sucks. The only thing that's just as bad is when you get to the range and you realize, oh, I forgot my magazine. It's like, oh, well, I just wanted to sight in this gun. Oh, it also has a magazine disconnect. Oh.
Yeah, I've done that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I hate magazine disconnects. What else did I do? I was looking at Kathy Jackson, the Cornered Cat website. She's always got a lot of useful information there. And I read something. She was kind of angry because people were actually accessing her site and copying her material, you know, and plagiarizing her stuff. And I started thinking, oh man, we used some of her stuff a couple of years ago after we heard her on the squirrels, but we gave her, we put the links in and we credited her for everything that we did. So I figured, So I messaged her and, and I told her who we are and stuff. And I said, once in a while, do you mind if we quote something? We'll put links in. She said, sure. Yeah. Great. No problem. Because I appreciate you asking at least anytime. So we have her permission to use anything on the page.
So what you're saying is in case legal is listening to a 3-year-old episode of New Shooter Canada,
we officially now have permission.
Yeah. We officially now have permission. Well, there's this gun review that I really like called Patrick E. Kelly. And he's now a sponsored Savage Shooter too, but he's a 1911 gunsmith. He does some great, great reviews. Well, people were actually cutting and pasting his articles like word for word and then copying them on to their web pages and putting their names on it. So they're ripping them off. Yeah. So, people look for stuff like that. If you're going to mention somebody's article, that's fine. Mention who wrote it, put a link in it and say, it's not mine, but here's some really good information.
Yeah.
And, give the person who wrote it the credit because, I do that all the time. News stories or something I'm not familiar with, we'll look it up, and if there's a good source, use it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of places, like you said, they don't mind that you use their material as long as you give them credit, because really that's what they want, right? They want credit for their work.
Yeah, and I just mentioned at the end, I said, we don't have sponsors, we don't generate revenue. We do it just for fun. All the expenses come out of our pocket, so we don't make any money off anything that we do. And she was fine with that. I'm sure if we, if we started profiting by somebody else's material, then yes, I could see them getting upset.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And us getting sued.
That'd be awkward.
Yeah.
What do you guys get me into?
And the legal department.
It's all George's fault.
the legal department at New Shooter Canada isn't exactly prepared to fight this in court.
No, especially now that Kelly's gone. We're not prepared. What about you, Mike? What you doing guns this week?
I just did a few things. I cleaned out my revolver because in anticipation of an upcoming I-Corps match, it was just getting kind of dirty, so I needed cleaning. I also put the shims in that I bought. I think I mentioned them last week. And it
on the GP100?
Yeah, on the GP100 for the hammer. I'm not quite satisfied with it. So you could see on a part of my hammer where it rubs against the frame when you cock and shoot it. And I was looking at it after I put the shims in, and it's how do I describe it? I think once you put the spring tension on it, it's tilting it to the side. So I almost needed a bigger shim for the side where it was rubbing on and a smaller one for the side it's not, just to kind of push it over and keep it more in the center. But, I mean, that's something that I'll just have to look at and decide if it's worth putting in a couple more orders for these shims or not. But either way, it still works fine, so I'll just keep going with that. Sarah did have a cowboy match yesterday, so I slicked up her shotgun. I hadn't looked at any of her stuff since Sarah hadn't been shooting cowboy for a while. And when I was talking to someone at the last cowboy match, he was giving me a bunch of tips on things to do to her shotgun. So I took it all apart. I cut down the spring for the lever to actually open, like to break the gun. So before it used to be, it was hard. Like you really had to put effort into it to move the little lever over in order to break the shotgun open. So now it's a lot better. And then I just did some general
polishing. Did you get rid of the auto safety?
I did not. Sarah's gotten so used to it, she said she'd rather keep it on. So that would have been easy enough to do, but she said she didn't mind it, so I figure I'll just leave it on. And she can always change her mind later, but once I cut it off, there's no going back.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just polishing up all the contact points, because last time I had looked at her shotgun or touched it at all, I didn't have a Dremel yet, so of course I needed to the Dremel out for a fun spin. It
did
was
you
just
polish
polishing.
The did you polish the chambers?
Yeah, I polished out the chambers a little more, because her shells did not just, like after shooting, they didn't just fall out, so. Unfortunately, her match got canceled due to rain and flooding again, so we didn't get a chance to go shooting it. But hopefully this week we'll take it out and just take some shots with it and see how well it works. Reload up some 38 Special for I-Corps. They have a slightly higher power factor of 120. So I needed to load up some ammo just to make sure I was going to be high enough. Not that there was going to be a chronograph at this match, but I just want to try play fair. Sarah and I are officially booked our hotel room for the charity match.
Woo!
Yep, so we'll definitely be there for at least a couple nights. And then today I shot the inaugural I-Corps match at my home club, Smith Falls, and it went really good.
Excellent.
It was great, yeah. A lot of people from Kingston and Peterborough, because that's where the next two closest I-Corps clubs are, made the drive all the way up to help support our club in our first match. So it was great shooting with them. And since they're seasoned shooters, they of course have all the coolest toys. So now I want a new revolver, but
that's the problem when you start looking at toys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I look at my GP100, which is, I guess you could say set up for IDPA, which is, you know, minimal modifications, you know, a few springs changes to lighten the trigger pull a little bit. And then you go to an I-Corps match where guys are running, you know, a 6-inch revolver, 8-shot, 9mm with compensators and red dots. You start feeling like you're behind the curve. But, oh yeah, so it was really good. Guns in the news. Benny, why don't you take us away with story number one?
Story 1. Active shooter opens fire in sports bar. Unfortunately for him, he forgets he was in Texas. By Officer Blue, May 15, 2017, edited. Arlington, Texas. An active shooter entered a Texas sports bar armed with two guns and opened fire, killing an innocent man. Then, before the shooter knew what was happening, his body gained an extra pound of lead, ending the threat. James Jones, 48, apparently ready to go on a deadly rampage on Wednesday evening when he entered the Zona Kelenti sports bar, started yelling about effing Mexicans, and shot Cesar Perez, 37. Jones did not know Perez, and he may have been targeted for being Hispanic. Witnesses said that they thought they would be next, as Jones, armed with two guns and multiple knives, scanned for additional victims. However, James Jones must have forgot he was in Texas. An armed concealed carry hero was eating with his wife in the restaurant at the time. The hero told his wife to get down as he drew his gun and opened fire on Jones, fatally shooting him. The hero was not seeking recognition for his courage act and asked to remain anonymous, saying that he was overwhelmed and relieved that he was able to keep Jones from killing more people. Shame we can't do that here.
No.
The concealed carry part, people, not the crazy rampage thing.
What?
Disclaimer.
Oh, we have the crazy rampage, yeah, but we don't have the concealed carry. It would be nice to be able to protect yourself with a firearm in Canada.
Yeah.
Even in your own home.
Yeah.
Well, you can legally, but the consequences are tremendous because they'll go after you for everything.
Yeah, and they treat you like it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You what become the criminal.
Better to be the victim.
Yeah, what's the saying? The punishment is through the process of going through the criminal courts.
Oh, yeah. Well, look what they did to Ian. Like $75,000 in legal fees. And for the judge just to tell the prosecutor that you're... The judge told the prosecutor not to proceed. He said, you don't have a chance of winning it.
Yeah.
But the attorney general still went after him.
I've been ordered to do this.
Yeah, I have to do it. Yeah. So in the end, you know, of course, Mr. Thompson won. And the good thing there, at least the judge ordered his guns returned immediately, which was nice.
Yeah.
And he's still being, I think he was interviewed again by Slamfire. He was still being harassed by his neighbors.
Well, one of the guys died. I was yeah. Well, maybe there's two of them.
Like the neighbor, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not at Ian's hand, though.
No. It was natural causes, I believe, or some other form. But yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And I believe he's starting a frivolous, I forget what they're called.
The lawsuit
itself isn't frivolous, but it should be against the prosecutor for pursuing these charges. There was no chance in hell you'd win.
As I recall, he was planning to do it, but you need the court documentation to do it and the transcripts. And the amount of transcripts involved was the cost of getting them. He was saving actually just to be able to afford to get the transcripts to proceed because it was $10,000 or $15,000 just to get the documentation from the courts.
That's ridiculous. There should be a public.
Yeah.
That should be public record. I think that's ridiculous.
And they charge you per page.
It's like when they charge you to get the gas license.
Yeah.
For anyone and our listeners who are licensed gas, in order to know the rules, in order to abide by the law, you must pay $250 every 5 years to TSSA, which is our regulating body in Canada, which is a complete farce because they're charging you to be aware of the laws that you may or may not break. So I think that's ridiculous, but hey, that's the country we live in.
Sounds like the Firearms Act to me too.
Well, at least the Firearms Act is out there for you to find on the internet, right? Like, yeah, it's hard to understand and it's legalese and all that, but this is hidden behind a paywall. In order to gain access to the gas code, you must pay.
Oh, wow. That's insane. That's insane.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's that. My rant's over. Mike, what's the next story two?
Okay, so the Liberals are trying to sneak a gun registry. Bill C-47 was slipped in with the new weed laws. So Bill C-47 will require importers, stores, and individuals to keep records and electronic information for a period of 6 years to determine if they have complied with the act. It will enforce stiff fines and penalties.
Right there. Businesses have to keep records for 7 years anyway. So the information's already there. So why do they have to do it a second time?
Well, it depends. They might want more information.
Now it has to be electronic and it has to be accessible by whatever government force wants to as well.
how easy will it be for the government just to reach in back door and pull everyone's record at any point in time? Or what will more likely happen, someone will hack the system and grab everyone's address and be like, oh, look who I'm going to go break into this weekend.
As if we haven't seen that happen again. I'm sorry, Mike, continue.
Yep. So Bill C-47 will enforce stiff fines and penalties to importers, stores, and individuals that are found to not be in compliance with the act. It will allow the governor and council to add further supplies, accessories, and other import or export goods under the classification of goods and technology to be called a brokering control list to the export control list or import control list. It will place liability of the information stored by the importer, store, and individual with the importer, store, and individual should the information be obtained in any way by an outside party.
So somebody hacks their website and the importer, store, and individual are culpable for it?
That, I'm not a lawyer, but that kind of looks like what it's saying. Yeah. So pretty much what they're saying is that if they get hacked, and like I said, someone gets a shopping list and they just go door to door at every gun owner, it's not the government's fault. It's my fault for owning a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how it sounds. Anyway, so the whole reason why we bring this up is because there is a petition going on right now. And the petition is two parts. One, not to sign into the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty and vote down and not allow Bill C-47 to pass into law, or to amend Bill C-47 to not include any of the sections and subsections for importers, stores, and individuals to keep any records of any imported or exported firearms, or any article that falls into the brokering control list, and amend Bill C-47 to not include the penalty for not keeping adequate records of a fine not exceeding $250,000, or to imprison for a term not exceeding 12 months, or both. So this is the electronic petition E-1073. Yeah, I have that right, 1073. So there will be a note in the show notes about this.
I've already signed up.
Yeah. Cause this,
I signed it.
This expires August 30th is when it's supposed to be finished. And unfortunately there are 2,093 signatures on it. I'd never actually, to be honest, heard about this. Actually, this just opened May 2nd. So since today is the 14th, I'm not that surprised. But,
because they tried to sneak it in. I think they didn't expect a lot of people to catch it as fast as they did. So
yeah. So, I mean, do I think that this will stop the government signing the UN trade treaty? Probably not. But hopefully we can ruffle enough feathers that they'll at least amend a few parts of it, not make it as bad as it currently looks like it is.
I don't know. With the way our petitions have been going for the past year or so, and the way that the past week I've seen the liberals answer question period, I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
They answered a question?
No. The form in which they think they answer the question, which is pretty much repeat the same thing every time to any question asked.
Yeah.
It's the biggest farce on earth.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's even allowed in parliament, because they're not answering the question. They're just wasting everybody's time.
They got asked a question, was it 18 times they got asked one question, and not once did he ever answer the question?
Yeah. No, he says they will say the same thing over and over again. And I was listening to a different podcast, and they played the clips, and you could tell that the guy was like starting to crumble, but like, you know, he has to toe the party line. So he just kept saying the same thing over and over again, which, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't answer the question, didn't show any integrity or any whatever. And pretty much they're being paid to sit there and do nothing.
Yeah. Well, technically, as long as they respond, then they can say, hey, we did better than the previous government. But really, yeah, they're just doing the same thing that,
Yeah, I'm turning the show way too political. Sorry, everybody.
That's okay. No, I think, well, we all feel the same way because we just don't usually get into politics. The Canadian Patriot Podcast, they're good at that. They're good at the politics.
Yeah.
We just try to stay away from it.
I'm supposed to be sleeping when they're airing. That's why I'm not on that show. Just kidding. That's not why I'm not on that show.
Oh, it sounds like you have a few rants you want to get off your chest.
No, we'll leave that for now.
You don't want to start a new segment called Benny's Rants?
No, I think I'm good for now.
Okay. I'm sure if
enough listeners ask for it, I think I can come up with something every once in a while.
We can have Hebrew highlights of This Week in Guns.
Oh, yeah. Someone else got stabbed today in the Old City.
Really?
Yeah, a police officer was stabbed in the Old City, and the terrorist was, I think it was today. I'm pretty sure it was today. It's hard when you're getting feeds from Facebook. But terrorist was neutralized, and you just see it's a video. You just see like one cop swinging his Jericho around, you know, cause they're not sure if there's going to be another attack, and another cop standing there with blood gushing out of his face, and you have no idea what's going on.
I know. You've got a couple of friends over there right now.
Yeah. Most of my army buddies are still over there. Actually, I had my one army buddy from Toronto actually went and, he emigrated. So yeah, I got quite a few buddies over there.
All right. Well, Thomas, why don't you take her to, greener pastures here with what's new in the industry?
Yes.
Well, I was really hoping we'd get George on the show tonight. We actually, called him on Skype, didn't answer. So I called him on the cell phone and we actually put him on speakerphone without letting him know. And we figured great outtakes. We can throw him under the bus, but he actually really isn't well. So we're not going to throw him under the bus this week, George, but this one's for you, George. Umberti now has a short stroke SAS Pro single action revolver. This thing looks sweet. All case colored. The new Umberti short stroke Pro, both models. Apparently the hammers are supposed to reduce trigger pull by less or trigger travel by 20% than the regular revolvers. The hammer is extra wide and low profile, offering a more positive cocking and uninterrupted view of the sight picture. I find myself single actions are kind of hard for me to see with that, just that big notch in the back. But it does have a custom made spring and encased and checkered grip to ensure smooth operation and a crisp trigger pull. It comes with the 4 3/4 inch barrel and a 5.5 inch barrel. And right now it's in 45 long Colt and 357. They do have, a stainless or nickel plated one with ivory grips. It's really nice, but it's a snubby. So we'll never get that up here. So I put this in for George, but he backed out again.
With those. Yeah, I guess when they refer to short stroke, they're just talking about the short stroke of the trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, well, I was just wondering if it was short stroke of the hammer, which to me would be even better, that if you didn't have to cock it back as far.
Well, that's what it says. It's a short stroke hammer with 20% less travel. And it's nice that it has the extra wide hammer.
Okay, I heard trigger. Okay.
So did I say trigger? I'm sorry. You did say trigger. You never know. I screw up all the time. It's a short stroke hammer.
Yeah. So, yeah, then I just wonder, you know, to get the same force that they would need to ignite the primer every time, is either is it going to be really heavy to pull back? Like it's going to be a real heavy hammer?
I don't know. I haven't actually had one in my hands. I haven't come up here yet.
Yeah, because that would be nice to have to not have to pull the hammer back as far. That would increase your speed a lot more than any, like the trigger would.
But and plus, with a lot of these single actions, if the hammer's cocked, you can't see the rear sight notch, can you? So I think where they've done this hammer, you can actually see the rear sight notch with the hammer fully forward.
Oh, you're saying with it not cocked? You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know with Sarah's, you can't see the sights when the hammer down, and that. That drives me nuts when a couple of weeks ago when I was planning on going to a cowboy match and actually shooting with Sarah, so I was practicing with her guns, and that drove me nuts because it's so hard to try and keep a sight picture from one shot to the next when you can't see your rear sights.
I know, I hate it. That's why.
Don't you have to pull the hammer back every time?
You do.
So then it, every time you're pulling back the hammer, you're breaking your natural point of aim anyway, so shouldn't that not make a difference?
If you're doing precision shooting, yes. When you're shooting a, like, 2 foot wide piece of steel from 10 yards away, not overly. In cowboy action, you just have to hit the steel. It doesn't matter where you hit it.
Okay.
So.
That's why George likes it.
How do I describe it? To me, like, the way that I see the fastest people do it is you have, like, a two-handed grip, but your support hand isn't really actually holding on to the grip. It's more just kind of sitting there, and it's more for cocking the gun. So you're almost holding your gun on target the entire time while you just pull the hammer back with your weak hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So there, you're not allowed, I think I remember George saying once, you're not allowed to, you're not supposed to fan your pistols.
Yeah. Well, fanning is, I believe fanning is traditionally, you know, when you hold it down at your hip and you use like your whole hand and you're just like swiping it.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you have both hands, so your support hand almost looks like it's holding onto the gun, but you're not so much because really it's just there to cock the hammer.
Huh.
Because there's different divisions, classes that the cowboy guys go in. So either you shoot your revolvers two-handed, so that's how you'd probably do it, or you do it one-handed, so you'd have to, with the same hand that you're pulling the trigger, then you're breaking your grip and your sight and everything to reach up and grab that hammer, pull it back with your strong hand. Or there's gunslinger, which is you're using both guns at the same time, so you're definitely breaking your grip every time.
Yeah, that's the only disadvantage of cocking with your shooting hand, is that you're losing your grip and you have to require it every time.
Yeah. So.
But it still looks like fun.
Oh, yeah, it does. I'm kind of surprised it took this long for someone to figure out that they can make it a little better, but then again.
Well, I think there's more money in IPSC and IDPA. So, like a couple years ago, people started coming out with, open division ready IPSC guns, right? So yeah. I guess now they're deciding, okay, now we have time and money to spend on cowboy action.
Yes and no, though, because you have to remember this. For every cowboy action shooter who's going to do it, they need two revolvers, not just one.
Right.
So you could almost assume that every person that they sell, you know, one gun to, they're going to sell two. And if they are a serious competitor, they're probably buying three so they have a backup.
And there's a few different companies that make really nicely well-tuned single actions right out of the box just for competition. Actually, Evil Roy, he actually has guns that he sells, I believe. You can get an Evil Roy tuned gun. He does the Ruger.
Yeah, the Ruger Vanquero. Yeah.
But there's a Taylor Creek. I think it's the Chuck Wagon. They have a really, it looks very similar to the Embry. It's got the checker grips and the tuned trigger and the lowered hammers. So there are quite a few nice single action competition guns out there.
Yeah. And you also have to remember, Benny, where do all those IPSC shooters go when their eyes start getting bad and they start getting the shakes?
Oh, shut up.
Right. So they're just waiting for the baby boomers to get to the age when they can spend the money on the cowboy action. That's all. It just makes more sense.
Waiting for? Yeah. We're practically there, right, Thomas?
Get out of here.
When are you retiring, Thomas?
Probably sooner than I anticipated. I can retire, I think, June 20th. I can officially retire with full pension.
Nice.
But I'm only going to be 57. This can be a young fellow. Actually, I told my mom the other day that I'm an old man. She goes, no, 57 is a new 40. You're just starting middle age now. That's because she's 76, but.
yeah. Oh.
No, but it's true. Like even today, it was a real struggle with my eyes to see those front sights. I had to put on, cause I got new glasses. And this time he didn't tweak my dominant eye for shooting. He made it strictly for distance. So with these new glasses, I can't see the front sight at all. Nada. So I didn't bring my shooting contacts today. And I keep a pair of a prescription that's three prescriptions back. So like 6-7 years old. I put those on to see and it's still not quite razor sharp. So I'm looking forward to getting that cataract taken out and then get 20/20. I've never had 20/20 vision. I don't know what it's like to see perfectly. So I'm looking forward to that actually. But then I'll be so old, I'll have the shakes and so out of practice, I won't be able to shoot anymore anyway.
Yeah.
He agrees with me. Yeah.
You need a little more, positive thinking there, Thomas.
Actually, no, I shot some really good groups today, so I'm happy. The first one, they're all on target, but wasn't nearly as accurate as I normally shoot. So then I really took my time and I adjusted the sights a little bit so I could see the target and the front sight, and I sort of lined up the blur so it looked pretty good. And I had 5 or 6 hits in the 10, and the rest were all in the black, so not as tight as I can normally shoot, but I'll take it.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to main topic. Thomas came up with this new main topic of new range fees. So a few complaints about new range fees, but range costs money to build. And, you know, most people who belong to older clubs are, you know, all the initial fees of buying property and moving dirt around and things like that have all been, you know, come and gone. So they can afford to reduce their members' fee a lot. But I guess some people are making comments about the high cost of some of the new ranges that are going in.
Yeah, I guess people don't really realize what the actual cost is. Like Mike said, my club, when they came up with the regs about the ventilation system, you know, you had time to put it in. When they changed the baffles, they had time to put it in. And the CFO has actually gotten a lot stricter these days. They used to say, well, okay, well, you've got a couple of months. Send me a picture when it's done. I'll give you a temporary approval, and then we'll come up and do the inspection, and we'll do it official. Nowadays, no, the CFO says, nope, you're shut down till the improvement's done. So, you know, like my club's been there for 50 years. My fees have never gone up in, I guess I've shot there maybe 15 years now. They've never gone up. So we were curious about the price of the actual, say, for example, the FOC range. So I drove over to, when I was there buying the lead, I went over there and asked to speak to Fred for a couple of minutes. And I was curious what the actual cost was for the range. You know, and I didn't expect him to tell me. It's confidential, but he did. The range itself is going to cost him about $2.3 million just for the range. And then adding the retail space, it's going to put his cost up to $3 million. So that's just to do the range, don't take into consideration what his actual lease rates, because he doesn't own the building. He's leasing the building. So he's got to pay, you know, all his rents and everything else. And when I walked in there, you couldn't move. Like, he needs a retail space. His business has taken off so well, and it's great to see, but you can't budge to get in the store. Every little space you choose. And when I pulled up, there was a skid, Smith & Wesson, M&P Sports, a whole skid of ARs sitting in front of the store. They couldn't bring it in right away because there was no room in the store. They had to move stuff around to bring all the guns in. So the retail expansion is really going to help him. But, you know, he's got extra costs, for example, that Gagnon's doesn't have. He needed to have the zoning change and the town approval, and that put additional cost in because he said they get all the, well, Benny was there, they get all the sound dampening needs taken care of. He had to have expert consulted. They had to find an acoustic consultant. What it is too, it's basically a building within a building. So you've got the building walls, and then he has double building walls between it. So you're talking like three layers, but it's a double building. And then the roof is concrete also. So nothing leaves the area. He's going to have 24 hour membership, I think. Did he say it was 24 hours? I don't remember, Mike. I'm pretty sure it's going to be 24 hours.
I think he said 24 hours.
Yeah, 24 hours.
He's going to have 24 hour security to go with it.
Yeah. So he's got to pay for 24 hour staff and security and retail ends. And so, you know, his costs are going to be up there. Plus the ventilation system that he's put in there and the amount of lines that he's running. So, you know, it's, I wouldn't be surprised if the fees are expensive, but then look at the cost of maintaining it. Or Gagnon's, actually, I wasn't even planning on going to Gagnon's. I just wanted to speak to Fred, and I was driving, traffic's really bad, so I got off on Baseline instead of staying off the 401, and I drove up to Gagnon's. I said, oh, I should go speak to Natalie. So I drove into Gagnon's, and I went in the gun shop, and I was really surprised to see, Kevin Bartley from Gobblestalker Calls. He's actually working part-time in the gun shop there, so if you want information and advice on turkey calls, he's a great guy working in the store. So I spoke to Natalie, And they were kind of, their costs are a little bit less because they, first of all, they own the building. So they don't have a landlord or lease agreement to have to deal with. They did have to do a lot of the similar modifications that, that Fred had to do, but they didn't have any zoning changes because the land is already zoned commercial and industrial. So that was one hurdle that they didn't have to do. She didn't know the numbers, but she said even if she knew them, she didn't want to tell me them if she knew them because she wanted to mention them, which is understandable. But her son has the information, but he wasn't around, so I didn't pursue that. It's not going to be 24 hours. The entrance is going to be through the store. That may change in a year. They also, with the lockers, Mike, apparently she said, far she understands, you can get two addresses on your ATT. So long as you have approval from the CFO, or if the range has approval of the CFO, they're going to have lockers to store your guns in.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
that's what she told me. I would never leave my gun in a locker. Well, lockers are a pry bar in 5 minutes.
They call them a locker, but what are they really, right? And you also have to remember this. They may, even if they were crappy lockers, they might also be inside a secure area.
Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see.
Cause I remember, they have to at least abide by storage laws, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, and I would like to think that Ganyan would realize that they can't just go, you know, and get a whole pile of old school lockers that, like you said, with a pry bar and 2 minutes, you're in.
No, I don't think so, because they have a secured room in the gun shop, too, for the restricted stuff. There is a secured area in there. So I'm assuming that they would make that the locker room.
Yeah, but that's awesome, because that would mean that for someone like you, to say you're going into Toronto for work, you could pack up your guns in the morning, if it's open early enough, go there, shoot, put your stuff in the locker, jump on the GO train, go to work, and then on your way back, just stop by, open up the locker, grab your stuff, and go home. Or do some more shooting, and then go home.
That's exactly what she said, because she has a lot of GM workers.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Actually, I've known Roger. I knew Roger for a long time. And I've been shopping at Ganyan's, maybe 30 years, because Roger was actually a good friend of my brother-in-law's. But I've never actually gone in there and spent any time talking to Natalie. And she was a really nice lady. I really enjoyed talking to her. Very knowledgeable shooter, too. So what else did she say? Right now, the retail is going to be, or the range is going to be, you have to go through the store. They're not going to have a separate entrance for the range right now. So the operating hours are going to be business hours for the club. She wants to monitor it for a year. And, you know, if the demand is there, she'll put a separate entrance. But she's really trying to attract families and kids as well. The thing I'd like to see, too, they did use at one time, they did do a lot of handguns. They had a lot of reloading components. And there was a lot of handgun stuff at Ganyan's. And when Roger got killed, they got rid of handguns altogether, and it's nice to see them coming back. So that's one good thing to see.
They carry handguns, but they don't display any, do they?
No. Because when the robbery happened, that's the first thing they did. They just stole the handguns. So they're making the handguns, because that's what the criminals want. They don't really want the long guns. They want the handguns. So they just make them a little less accessible. But it's nice to see them coming back. No, and they are listed on their website.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen, or one of those websites that they have, they always seem to have a big used selection. So.
Oh, yeah.
If you're looking for a discount, or, you know, maybe it's your first gun and you're not quite willing to jump in with both feet.
And, you know, she was really interested in some of the stuff about this show. I was telling her how many women I've seen out competing, especially at my club, the amount of women that are actually shooting action pistol. And then, of course, you know, I bragged about Mary.
Yeah.
Well, look, I got this friend of mine. She just turned 18. She's amazing, you know? So she was good to see. Happy to hear that. What else? And the other thing, she didn't know about Firearms Outlets range. She didn't hear much information, but she did get the East Hill Outdoors membership structure. And we both thought it was funky. It's.
What is it?
It's different membership levels. And you have to pay to go, and then you have to book lanes in advance. She said that she will have reservations, but you can reserve ranges, lanes at the club.
Yeah.
But not all of them. And she won't have it. But if you just want to go shooting, you have to actually make a reservation at that club.
Okay. So pretty much when you become a member at East Hill, it doesn't mean that you every time you go shooting it's free. It just means you get a discount when you go shooting.
Yeah, basically. Depending on how much you pay.
I don't like that business model, because I feel like generally the perception is you pay to be a member of a range, you show up, you shoot. If you want to reserve a range, that's something, or a bay, that's something else. But if you show up to the range and you're a member, then why are you paying to use the range? Isn't that what your membership's for?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they look at your membership more as your payment so that you can get an ATT to the range.
Well, nowadays you don't need one anymore.
Yeah.
You're right. It's implied.
Now
with
you're
your
issued
license.
An ATT as soon as you buy your first your first restricted.
Yeah.
A lot of the ranges seem to be still seem to be running on the old system. Like even for this steel challenge match at Silverdale, it seemed to be you know, you've got to be a member, and if you're not, you have to get a letter of invitation from the club. But that just, I think that for Silverdale anyways, I think that's more of a rule so people can abide by the range rules.
Yeah.
Rather than just show up and do whatever the heck you want.
Yeah.
Well, actually that was one of the things that Natalie, they're going to do the club level safety course, and everybody has to take the club level safety course. And I don't disagree with that at all. I think everybody should take the course.
Yeah, especially if they're going to have rules similar to, like, your club, right, Thomas, where there's, like, you know, what ammunition you're allowed to shoot and what ammunition you're not. Well, like, if they're going to specify.
You have to go over, you know, the club rules as well as the... The problem is, and a lot of the clubs want the members to take the safety course because you don't actually learn handgun safety in the restricted class.
No.
You just don't. You know, there's no live fire. There's no tactile experience besides just handing out a gun with dummy rounds. And it's a liability issue. And I think the CFO requires that you still have to take the club level safety course for new members.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But what amount of training the club want to force you to do is kind of up to the club too, right?
My club level safety course was basically sitting through a abridged version of the restricted class.
Because
it's the same rules. It's pretty much the same. You sit there and you keep your gun pointed down range, axe improve. How do you move it from your case to the bench and the bench to the case and all that stuff? There was a level, my range, required there to be, you have to do a couple of probationary shoots. You know, just so that, you know, they knew you knew which end was the dangerous one, kind of thing. And that was it. But
don't use your front sight to pick your nose.
And that's, but that's reasonable.
That's always a good idea, Mike.
But that could be painful. But that's a good idea. You teach them the basics, then you observe them just to make sure they can do the basics and be safe.
Yeah.
Well, my club maybe goes a little overboard. But the advantage is when you're finished with probationary shoots, you can shoot. You actually get coached through it. Where I was the Lower Trent Valley. I've got something in the show notes about them. I was speaking to one of the one on their website. You do the course, and no, I think you do, like, there's no probationary shoots. You just take the course. That's it. You don't have to do any probationary shoots.
Yeah. Well, that's how my club was. Like Benny said, I did a 2-hour condensed version of the restricted course, like sitting in the clubhouse. And then we all go down to the range and everyone gets, I think, if I remember correctly, everyone gets 2 mags and pretty much, you know, 2 people at a time. You prove that you know how to pick up the gun and carry it from the safe table over to the firing line. You load the gun, you take 10 shots, you know, you reload the gun. And I think the guy will tell you, you know, speed it up a little bit, do some double taps. And they just want to make sure you can control the gun. And after those 20 rounds, he says, congratulations, you passed. And now you can bring your gun. We have a separate holster course, but I mean, the rule at my club is also if you're an IDPA, like I didn't have to do the holster course because I'm an IDPA member and I've already proven that I know how to use a holster. So I don't have to redo it all over again. So pretty much at that point in time, I could bring my restricted and I could walk around with the gun holstered. So.
Yeah, I also have to do the holster qualification course, and I was this close to asking Trevor if he could do like a quick course or something while he was here, but then I realized I don't have the time or the resources to attend such a course. Yeah. So.
Are you staying in Guelph over the?
We haven't decided yet because it's so close to the Sabbath and everything. It might, like last year, it was walking distance to the range, so. We stayed, and also Brockville's 3 hours from my house.
Yeah.
But this year it's like, I think I want to say a 40 minute drive or something. Okay. So even if I finished the Ragnarok class ends at 5, and I stick around for another 2 hours, so 7, it still gives me an hour to get home in time before sunset. So yeah. We might book a hotel room for the weekend, but we're not sure yet.
Okay. I was going to say, cause maybe you could go to night school.
Yeah. That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
To come back from this and just be like, yeah, I'm certified. I'm on Ontario, so I can't shoot IPSC, but you know, I'm holster certified.
Yeah. Well, yeah, black badge is still something different, right? Like I'm not even black badge certified yet, so.
Oh, it's a pain. Yeah. And they've extended the course hours. It's a much longer course now.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I've been trying since the new year to do a black badge course, but I mean, when they require it's like a one day, it's supposed to be a meet and greet, and it's like 2 or 3 weeks before the actual black badge, and then the black badge is a full Saturday and a full Sunday. I mean, every time that they've offered the courses, there's always been at least something that's been up on one of those 3 days that, you know, I can't get out of because it's family or because they email me and like, oh, we're doing our meet and greet tomorrow. And it's like, oh, well, if you told me that 3 months ago, I wouldn't have agreed to, you know, do something else. But, oh, well, I just got to wait and see. So really, I just want to join. I just want to join IPSC so that I can shoot at the indoor ranges over winter. Go shoot with ET.
I never renewed my membership with IPSC Canada.
No,
they'll probably have to make me. I mean, I have to take the classroom portion, but they probably make you do the live fire again.
Do you remember what your number was? 2, 3, maybe 4.
My badge number.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's downstairs. No, it's up there. I only did it like 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Oh, okay. I figured you got it before IPSC was even a thing. When they're just handing them out for novelties.
How much you like to edit, Mike?
Hey, if you go on a swearing rampage, I can just cut right here, and in 15 minutes, we'll be joining you back, folks.
Yeah, I just don't like it. I don't like the gaming of it. I don't like how much hassle it is to get into a match in Ontario because it's just so, so busy.
Yeah.
And it just got frustrating. So maybe once I retire, yeah. I get my eye fixed, I'll think about it. But you know, I am getting old and slowing down. I may start having to shoot cowboy action. You never know.
They don't have an experienced division in IPSC.
It's called seniors, Benny.
No.
I didn't want to say anything.
Oh no. I think I'm approaching the super senior division soon.
Oh wow.
Rakowski teased the hell of me because when I went to do my black badge, he goes, you realize you're in the senior division. What do you have in the senior? I think once you're over 45 or something, it's.
Ooh, wow. That's, I'll even admit that. I think that's pretty young, but.
Yeah. I don't know.
But, oh well, I guess that's just the way it is. Yeah,
well, it's fun. I met a lot of really good people shooting IPSC. There's some really good people out there, so.
Yeah. From what I understand, I don't think IPSC is quite as competitive to get into up in Ottawa. It's just, like, it's not that it's not popular. I think it's just not as competitive. There's less people shooting IPSC up here.
But it's really popular in Quebec. You've got a lot of French shooters coming over to the ranges. Was it the Frontenac, the one we went to?
Oh yeah, but, yeah.
We had a lot of people from Quebec showing up for that. It was really popular.
Yeah, well, that's also different, right? I mean, if there was a big shoot going on in Quebec for IDPA, I would jump across the border in a heartbeat because it's relatively close and it's a major match, right? major matches are always more fun, so.
I got a question for you. When you went to that match in Florida, what was the entrance fee?
I'm trying. Someone asked me that today. I want to say it was somewhere, let's just guess, somewhere around $250 American.
Each. Okay.
That was for a 12-13 stage match.
And that was a state level match though, right?
Yeah, that was a state level match. That was pretty much, that was, you know, a hair shy of nationals.
Oh wow.
I can remember when I got my black badge, the provincial was coming up and McCroskey messaged me and he wanted me to sign up. I said, I don't think I have enough experience. And he gave me crap for it. Because yeah. I had less experience than you, but the sign up fee was $300. The match was like in Sudbury.
Yeah.
And I showed it to Terry and it's like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. Because, oh yeah. Well, I was talking with a bunch of the I-Corps guys and a bunch of them knew that I had gone down to Florida. So they were asking if I'd be interested in going down to Florida for, the world shoot for I-Corps. And I think I asked them how much it was. And I think they said it was roughly $200 there for the world championship for I-Corps.
See, that's still reasonable though.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it also depends on, you know, you have to remember the size of the match, right? Like how many people they need volunteers. Cause here's the thing, just because someone volunteers and technically you don't pay them an hourly salary, you still generally buy them shirts, you buy them lunches, they have to show up to help work. So you need, you know, more food there. There's a lot of fees that go into it. Not to mention if you want to give away prizes and plaques and things like that. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, Glock might give you a free gun to give away, but they're not necessarily saying, oh, here's a check for $10,000 to cover your maintenance fees, right? To cover the porta potties that you need to put on site for the competitors.
I hate to see how much those trophies cost Chris Anderson every year. Cause yeah. I know the engraving alone is expensive.
Oh, it is. So, I mean, that's just it, right? There's a lot of fees. There's a lot of fees in behind, you know, these major matches that I'm sure there's a lot of people don't consider. And you also have to question sometimes, you know, if you need a range that can handle, let's say, 12 stages, that means you need, you know, like I know my club could never handle that. A bunch of the clubs I shoot at could probably never handle that. So, you know, you're getting into the, you know, the 1%
bigger range is fees.
The 1% of clubs that can actually support that. And then you're turning to them and saying, oh, by the way, we need your entire facility. No one else is allowed to shoot here while we're here. Right. They're going to turn around and say, okay, that's fine, but our price just doubled. So.
Well, you have to. I'm like George. I'm too cheap. I'm not going to spend $300 to go shoot. I just won't do it.
Yeah. I don't mind
$300 doing it. $300 to shoot, $300 in ammo, and then, you know, $200-$300 for a hotel room, and another $100-$200 for food. Thank God I don't drink, or there'd be no money left.
Yeah. Well, it's also one of those things where, like, how often do you go shoot a large match, right? Like, if you're only going to shoot, like, provincials only comes around once a year, right? Nationals only comes around once a year. And unless you're, you know, maybe when you retire, Thomas, maybe you're going to buy an RV and, you know, tour the U.S. and do every state championship.
But now, unless that's a different story. I've thought about that.
Yeah. I've already talked about it with Sarah. I think that's my retirement dream.
I think you're already looking at a bucket list at that point, in which case, you know, you're doing it for the thrills, right? Not for the,
Yeah. You're doing it to that point. You're doing it so that you have a map of the U.S. and you can put a peg in every state that you've done a state championship. But my point more along the lines is how many people do, I'll say maybe more than two major matches a year. So if you're not doing very many of them, and I bet you most people don't even do one. So, I mean, if you're only going to do one major match a year, you know, it's kind of like going on vacation. You splurge on yourself a little bit. You have a good time. You spend a little more. So that's how I justify going to major matches. And, I mean, you're never going to get a sponsorship if you don't go to the major matches, right?
Plus, it's easier if your wife actually shoots and she wants to go too. You don't have to talk somebody into letting you go or convince somebody. They're like, yeah, let's go. Cause they want to do it too.
Except you hit the jackpot on that one, Mike.
Except she didn't shoot I-Corps, so.
Hey, I'm pretty sure SAS probably has nationals too. Okay. Oh, yeah. It doesn't have to be a one-way street.
Oh, I'm sure they do. It's just a matter of convincing Sarah.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to convince them.
Yeah, sometimes.
I tried to talk Terry Lennon to the provincials for the upset for about 3-4 years ago, and it wasn't worth the aggravation to ask her a second time.
No.
Yeah, I did try.
What?
Yeah, the screaming ensued. The dog started to howl. It wasn't pretty.
See, my biggest problem was being like, oh, it's 4 hours away. Oh, do we want to drive 4 hours? That's not the cost. No, that doesn't matter. No, it's just the 4 hours away. That's what we care more about for provincials. Mind you, provincials for IDPA. Oh, boy, how much is it? I think provincials IDPA is only, like less than $100.
Yeah.
Mind you, I think I'm trying to remember what the number of competitors. I think the number of competitors is closer to between 70 and 100. Whereas I imagine the IPSC provincial, I think it is much higher.
Oh, well, probably 300-400 people.
Yeah, so I mean, the size of the match is obviously much smaller.
And wait, of course, you said and then, there's no prior, what's it called, experience needed for to do IDPA? When's the Nationals?
You only have to be a member of IDPA. I went online, I was going to join, because yeah. I found some rangers around here that do shoot it. Of course, they shoot it during the week. But, $40 membership.
Yep. Yeah, there's no, you don't, to get into provincials or even a state championship, there is no prerequisite. So, if there was space left, if you really want to, you could sign up today. You could, sign up with IDPA, get your IDPA number, then you could sign up for provincials or a state championship. When it comes to nationals, then they have a point system where for every, it's for every like state championship or regional major match you go to, you get points, and they let people into nationals based on the number of points you have. So even that is based on just participation, not even by winning.
Okay.
Yeah, and you got the gear because I think your holster would qualify.
Yeah, no, it's the basic. You know, I think it's. I would call it an IDPA kit where it's, you get your three mags, your two mag pouches, and your holster.
Yeah, that's the bare minimum. That's what you need. And a gun.
And a gun, yeah.
It helps to have something to put those mags in.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually looking at the rules because I was going to order a double mag pouch from Red Hill Tactical. And I like the outside external screws for tightening them down, you can't use those.
Yeah, you can.
Well, the rules don't.
It says, no, what it is you can't have like a wing nut on them. Like you can't adjust them by hand from the outside.
Yeah, so you can't have the external screws on them.
Yeah, but I mean, if you have a screw that had a hex key on it on the outside, you could just use that.
Yeah, but then you have to use a tool, right? I like having it to, I can just, with my race gun holster, just tighten it up and loosen up as I don't need a tool to do it.
Why are you tightening and loosening it all the time?
Well, before I draw, I'll loosen it up a little bit. And then if I'm walking around, I'm not shooting, I'll just put the tension back down, like locking it down when I'm not actually using it, basically.
Or, now this is a real difficult concept, Thomas. You just tighten it to where it's snug, but not too snug. And you just leave it there.
No, because I prefer it looser for the draw. And then once I holster it, I just lock it back down. Yeah. Just like when you guys use the magnetic holsters or the ghost holsters, there's a lock and unlock.
So yeah, it's I don't locked, use this.
Yeah, it's either locked or it's not locked. So
yeah.
I like to keep it locked down if I'm not using it. I just back out the one screw like one turn and it's fine.
Yeah.
But I like the extra security of
There also is no, like, tension rule anymore on holsters. So if you want, you could just leave them loose, bouncing around in there, and it doesn't matter.
Until your gun drops out, you get disqualified.
Well, if your gun drops out, yeah. Are you tightening and loosening your gun, your holster, before your draw? I thought you were just talking about your mag holders.
No, just my holster. Not my mag holsters.
Oh, I thought you were talking about your mag holsters. That's why I didn't understand why it was such a big deal to you.
Why would I loosen up my mag holsters?
I don't know.
I have the tension just right so I can run and they don't fall off.
Well, put it this way. My revolver, and I was playing with this, because I-Corps, their method of determining if your equipment is good or not is you have to hop. And if anything falls out, then it's not tight enough, not secured, right? Well, when I hop with my revolver, you can actually hear my revolver click because it actually, like, slides up, like, in the free float, and it will click back down when I hit the ground. But it's never, it's never going to fall out. But clearly there's virtually no tension on it. So. And in IDPA, you can't use like a race holster anyway. So you're using like a full Kydex holster anyways.
Yeah.
So.
But I was just looking at the mag holders that had the tension adjustments. Well, I kind of like those too, but then I find out that you can't use them.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well, that's why you get IDPA gear and then you get IPSC gear and then you get I-Corps gear and.
You get old and you get cowboy action gear and then you shoot, then you end up joining the bowling pin league because you can't hit anything else but the bowling pins.
Anyways, Thomas, you put event number one in there. Why don't you take her away?
Okay. On Saturday, June 3rd, the Lower Trent Valley Fishing Game Club is hosting their annual or their eighth annual Youth Day Family event. This event includes 20-gauge and 410 trap shooting for the kids, 22 rifle shooting, tomahawk throwing, trout fishing pond, petting zoo, face painting, model making, indoor laser tag, computer flight simulator, words and water taxidermy, fly fishing, and casting. This event is free for all youth under 18 years of age. Donations and volunteers are also welcome, so you can contact, I can't read this, these glasses.
The email that's in the show notes?
Yeah, yes. The email is, can you say that aloud, Mike?
Email in the show notes.
Okay, email in the show notes. If you can help out, visit the club website for directions. So we put both emails and the club website in the show notes. And it looks like a lot of fun. I actually messaged, was it Andrew at the show? At the, I'm just trying to, there was something else he messaged me about and I don't put it in there. Shoot. I'll update it for next week's show, but there is something else happening there too. But it looks like a lot of fun and it's free if you're 18. So if you got nothing to do on that date, you get a bunch of kids, take them out, have some fun.
Cool. Event number two, Carbine Operator Course with Ragnarok Tactical, July 7th in Kitchener, Ontario. $200 taxes included. Links in the show notes.
7th Annual Canadian Podcaster Charity Shoot, July 8th, Guelph, Ontario. $40. Links are in the show notes.
And the Got Your Six Charity Shoot. Links are also in the show notes. We should put the date in there for that.
Yeah.
And we're still waiting for Mr. Uzi to contact us. He never answers his emails.
Are you going to throw him under the bus every week until he answers you?
Until he actually messaged me. Tom, message me.
You know what? I kind of hope he never messages you now. And event number five is the Silverdale Gun Club has a whole pile of new courses, so you can check out the website, which is in the show notes.
The Florenceville Gun Club is having their fourth annual Gun Club fundraiser. Tickets can be purchased at contactus.fssc@gmail.com or just check the show notes just in case I butchered that one.
And it's in the show notes. Good.
Benny, any listener email?
Nope. All right, yeah. There's nothing there. Okay, good. Phew. Yeah, nope, nothing there. Nothing there. Please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca. Our Facebook page or in the comment section of our website at newshootercanada.ca. So if you guys want that Hebrew corner where I rant about something randomly, that's where you're going to put your requests.
Okay, Thomas, can you read the iTunes review?
Yeah, you're kidding. Okay, I've been listening. Hang on here. I got to move the microphone closer because I got to put my face right up, pull my glasses down. I can't see the small print with these new glasses I just got. I've been listening since the day George did the show by himself. I've enjoyed it extremely well and it's a great source of information. Hope George gets better in the future. And it doesn't say who it's from.
It's from Lakeboy 1971. And it says it has evolved extremely well and it's a great source of information.
I told you I could see. Why, you purposely put the smallest possible print in there you could.
iTunes won't let you copy and paste, so I have to do a screenshot and drop it in. So the bigger the review you leave, the smaller the print. So just so you know, people, leave a nice big long one and we'll get Thomas to read it or try.
I should have a magnifying glass here for next time.
Okay, so someone put a comment under Facebook like, so I'll let them read it.
We did have 1,100, but apparently we only have 1,099 now. So, George, stop messing with your own show.
Was it George or was it Wes that kept on liking us?
I don't know.
We finally hit 1,100. Or if you want, go on to the Redneck Canadian Redneck Neck page and unlike his show.
No, I'm checking Facebook right now. It says 1,100 likes.
Oh, yeah, at least we dropped down. 1099.
Yeah.
Sorry, 1099.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're somewhere in that area. Anyway, so closing comments. So last week we kind of butchered this. Red Hill Tactical has generously given our listeners a discount code, and it's RHTNSC. And do we know what that, how long that promo is good for?
Indefinitely. Until he ends it.
Okay. Go check out their website. There's a link for their website in the show notes. And check them out and see if there's anything that you're interested in. Right now they have the special, the IPSC package, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Comes with the belt and 5 mag pouches and a holster. Yeah, it looks really good. I was looking at that and I thought, oh, if I get a new gun soon, that could be what I go for.
Nice kit like that. I've been on his website a couple times. He's got some really nice stuff.
Yeah, he does. And he has some real interesting designs on there too. So.
I kind of like the double colors. That's something I didn't see recently.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about that and I thought if you were someone who was concerned about reholstering your gun, per se, someone who is new and just nervous about it, you could almost go out, get like a plain black on the outside and get a bright, you know, red, pink, purple, whatever tickles your fancy on the inside. And that way, whenever you go to reholster your gun and you're looking down your holster, it would be very obvious because you'd be able to see on the inside.
Actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Especially if you're old and blind like me.
One thing they keep saying nowadays is there's no reason if you're reholstering your gun, there's no reason to not look at what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Otherwise your gun should still be out.
Yeah.
That's why situation awareness and whatnot.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where I would say holstering and unholstering is probably one of the more dangerous parts of shooting, right? Because your gun is, if not actually, very close to pointing right down at your own leg. There's a lot of important stuff in there, you know, veins that carry that important red stuff right there that you really do not want to put a bullet into. And
I always pay close attention when I put that gun back in the holster if it's loaded.
Oh, yeah.
Matt, I should really start marking down all the things I can rant about talking about blood. But, one thing I...
Okay, we're taking notes for Hebrew Corner. Hang on. Okay, go on.
One thing I do remember from the Rick course is if you just shift your hips ever so slightly, it makes it that much safer. So try it out, guys. And try it on an empty gun, not a loaded one.
Yeah, and like any shooting sport that's out there, I say any, pretty much everything but cowboy shooting, you're never holstering the gun on the clock. So there is no rush. Take your time.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's the reholster that generally gets people, I think.
Yeah.
No? Unless they're trying to do the really close speed shot. That's also.
Oh yeah, when you're pulling out the gun, you're pretty much shooting from the hip.
Yeah, and you're, I've just seen that one YouTube channel guy. And then
The guy that shot himself in the hip?
No, he shot himself in the leg, but he just goes, I just shot myself. And he's like limping away and that was the end of his channel, which apparently wasn't very good to begin with, but.
I remember that.
I don't know, I didn't watch enough of it.
And he was really close to the target when he did it.
Yeah, that is a drill that people do, but
I shot myself. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those things for people who you need experience before you try and start doing things like a quick draw, right?
Yeah.
And even if you think you are experienced enough for it, you have to remember you can't go fast enough to, you know, patch up that hole you just put in your leg. But anyways, moving on, shout outs. Anyone have a shout out?
Yeah, I'd like to do a shout out for Fred for taking the time to talk to me and Natalie from Ganyan Sports. It was nice talking to her. I appreciate you two both taking the time to talk to me. What about you, Mike?
I just want to give a shout out to all the ICOR SOs and volunteers, as well as Dave, who is the club member who actually brought ICOR to Smith Falls.
Excellent. And Mr. Benny.
Well, I have a shout out to my lovely wife because it is Mother's Day.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess we should shout out our moms too, right?
I was supposed to ask you guys last week what your plans were, but I forgot. So yeah. Shout out to my wife, obviously, like usual, for keeping me going and, you know, letting me indulge in this wonderful hobby. Which, as my mother mentioned, today, is there's more to life than shooting. But then, I think it was Thomas that posted on Facebook. No, shooting is, life is just the stuff in between matches, right? So.
Yeah.
Well, that was Mike, I think.
Yeah, that was me.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Mike. So, right. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah.
And thanks to Silverdale for actually having for sharing and posting about this competition. And hopefully it'll be my first of many competitions that I'll be competing in.
Yeah.
So yeah, I look forward to that.
Yep. Well, I'm sure it will be great. Now that you've said it, I should say happy Mother's Day to my mother and to Sarah as well.
Yeah, we're bad sons. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Actually, I went and saw her last night because I had things to do today, but she made me promise that she's going to come next Sunday. Well, my birthday's next Saturday, so she wants to come down for my birthday and she wants me to take her shooting on her birthday. So yes, Mom, we'll go shooting next week. I promise. She loves my Ruger 10/22. Doesn't care about the pistols, but she loves, because you can sit down. Well, you see how Benny knows how accurate it is. I sit there and I bench her. And like she just puts one hole right through one after the other. So she really likes that. So I promise, Mom, next week we'll go.
All right. So Thomas, why don't you take us on out of here?
Any of you guys taking your mom shooting?
Not yet.
My mom came out shooting and she did it in heels and she's done.
Okay. She gets bonus points then if she did it in heels. Okay. Until next week, keep your barrels down range and smoking. Take a kid shooting.
Time spent at the range, time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Squirrel. Shiny thing.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look. Like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.
This may all go into outtakes.
Exactly. If it doesn't go to answering machine. Creator of New Shooter Canada, and we can't get him on the phone. George. Oh, hang on. He hung up on me. He's been listening to Slamfire. Well, at least we got a hold of George.
Yeah. Well, we know he's alive. That's a good start.